Welcome to the In His Voice podcast, hosted by me, Rob L. Lowe, where we talk about everything from the bedroom to the boardroom, from the playground to the stadium, and everything in between without ever bashing women. Today's show, I'm excited about. I actually have a treat for you guys. So I often have friends who I grew up with or people that I've met on the show. And most of them just happen, you know, to live in the United States or live in places that I've lived or worked. But today is special because today I got a good friend of mine on the show, someone I used to work with, but someone who I actually call a friend. And he has been to my house. My family loves him. He is my brother from over the ocean. I want to welcome to the show Mr. Mark Crawford. Mark, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Rob. Nice to meet you. Hi, everybody watching. Nice to
meet
you.
All right, man. Listen, we were prepping for the show, and we were thinking about all the things we could talk about. And before I jump into it, like, just give a little bit of background about yourself. Tell who you are, where you live, what do you do, anything you want to share.
Okay. Well, I'm from Scotland. Maybe the accent might slightly give that away a little bit, although I don't believe I've got a broad Scottish accent, but many people tell me I do. I live in Edinburgh. I've been born and brought up in Edinburgh, and I have three kids, teenage daughter, a younger daughter, and a little baby son, and I work in HR. I've done human resources for about 15 years, various different companies from financial, manufacturing, private, public sector, charity work. But I've also done some stints in talent acquisition, executive recruiting in my early life and career. And I've done a little bit of operational management and leadership as well. So I've done a little bit of a toolbox of different roles in my time.
Well, man, you gave the professional intro. So now we're going to get to Mark. Dude, I met you maybe late 2017, early 2018. We worked together. Actually, Mark worked on my team and led up the HR function in the UK for me. And not only did he lead for the UK, he did a lot of work for me supporting stuff in Hungary. Supported the team that was in Spain, just did some tremendous things. And as an HR professional, dude, you are in my top list. When I tell you, like, you are a rock star, you are a rock star. But what I really, really appreciate about you is, you know, it was a cultural moment for me when I first met you. Because not only did you come from across the pond, I think we were at a meeting somewhere, and I heard this accent, and then you had this punky hair dude that was kind of cool looking, right? And then I saw your arm, and you had this tattoo. It was on your wrist, and I was like, oh, you got a tattoo? You was like, yo, no, I have tattoos. So you rolled up your arm, and you had a whole sleeve, right? And then you had a bunch of tattoos. I was like, dude, you can do that in the UK? Like, no one says anything about tattoos of that nature when you're working? And you was like, I don't know, but, man, like, it's just who I am. And for me, it was so dope because I'm a fan of tattoos. I actually have four of them. But tell me the whole journey with tattoos, man. When did you start? And How did that all come about? And we'll get to how it works, how it affects you at work. But your tattoo journey, dude.
Well, the starting place is spontaneous. Spontaneous and impulsive. Right? And I wasn't young. Not to really be classed as a youngster, right? I was 25.
Okay.
Which is only, you know, 10, 12, 12 years ago. So 25, and I just decided I wanted a tattoo on my back. I love David Beckham. I'm a huge fan of David Beckham, and he's plastered with tattoos, right? And And he has this angel tattoo on his back, and I really like it. I thought, yeah, I like that. I want it on my back as well. So I just booked it, went into the tattoo shop and said, this is what I want. First tattoo, and it's on my back. It goes across my shoulder blades and down the spine. And that was the first tattoo for 4.5 hours sitting and getting that thing done. And then it just kind of went for there. Just more spontaneous, impulsive decisions. That I was going to get another tattoo. I'd pick a design that I like, and then I would just go in and get it. And I love the pain.
You know what? It is a high.
Really good Literally. Feeling. Yeah.
It's a high. Like, for people that get who don't have tattoos and who've never gotten one, like, once you get it, like, it's excruciating, but yeah. You kind of, like, keep going. Like, just keep going.
I love it. I mean, the shoulder blade, I swear I could feel the needle.
Wow.
It must have been close to the shoulder blade bone, but I just felt it, and, you know, it was sore, but it was kind of like, it's okay. I quite like this. This is fine. And when I had my neck done, because I've got my neck tattooed, I fell asleep.
You fell asleep on a neck tattoo?
Fell asleep on the neck tattoo, yeah.
Mark, how many tattoos do you have? Like, I know you have a whole sleeve. So how many tattoos make up the sleeve, or was it one sleeve?
There's probably about 6 or 7 different tattoos that make up the sleeve.
Okay.
And it kind of goes from the neck down the shoulder and then down to my hand. The hand was the last one I had done. The hand, actually, I just wanted to point this out, was the most painful tattoo.
Wow.
It was a lot. The back, the neck, you know, even under into the armpit area, the hand was definitely the sorest, and especially around the knuckle area and down into kind of between the fingers. That was really, really
painful.
Dude,
you got that detailed on your hand?
Yeah, it's a tiger on the hand now.
And wow.
It just kind of goes straight up. And each tattoo, there's kind of like things that I like, interest, something that means something to me. So there's sort of meaning behind the different tattoos, from my love of music to, you know, the tiger I see as an animal that's alone. It's kind of almost like the Lone Ranger, but he's powerful.
Yeah.
He's comfortable out there in the wilderness. So, you know, all things that I feel I am in my own character. And then, you know, things like I've got a Batman tattoo up on the shoulder here with the bat and things
Dude,
like that.
Dude, my wife is a huge Batman fan. So if she knew that, dude, she probably would have went and got a tattoo with you if you got it at the same time.
Well, I'm a huge Batman fan too, so you can tell Robin that the next time I'm in the US and we're together, we can sit and watch a Batman movie for
All
sure.
All right, I'll tell her.
And then we'll debate who the best Batman is. My wife's nephews and nieces, they actually call me Batman. So we convinced them that in the evenings, when they're in bed sleeping, I'm out there fighting crime. They call me Batman.
Dude, Mark, I have 4 tattoos,
yeah.
Right? I'm going to get probably 2 or 3 more, but I have 4. I have one here. One on this arm, one on this shoulder, one on this chest, and one on this pec over here.
Mm.
And I got a couple others I'm going to get. But I remember after getting this one over here, it was smaller, I got it big. And I remember, like, oh, my God, like, I'm going to walk in corporate America and they're going to see my tattoo, right? Like,
right.
And it's a tattoo of a rose, and it has my mother and my grandmother's name because they passed away.
Mm.
But I remember being very self-conscious about, you know, will people think I'm less professional because I have a tattoo, right? So what was your thought process when you started getting these tattoos? Did it ever cross your mind that there might be a backlash or repercussions of getting these cool tats and then trying to work in this thing called corporate America?
Do you know, probably the early days, yes, right? I mean, starting your tattoo journey with the back.
Yeah.
It's a safe, right? Nobody sees that unless you're on the beach. And then slowly the arms get done, you know, the upper arm area, and you start working your way down. And for sure you're kind of conscious that it has, you know, your tattoos need to stop at the sleeve because I wore shirts in some jobs and,
Yeah.
you know, you had to look professional. But for sure, but something happened. For sure, I can't put my finger on it, but something happened where that kind of like you are who you are, that authentic
Yeah.
part of you
Yeah.
took over, and where you would accept that it doesn't matter if people judge you. You
Yeah.
can't control that, but as long as you're happy and you're comfortable in your own skin and what you put on your own skin, then it's fine. And that's where it actually, the neck was before the hand, right? So that, I mean, you couldn't get any more visible than
Right.
the neck and the shirt. You know, the shirt does hang down, but you can still see the tips. And the guy, the tattooist, when I went in to get the neck, because I was with my best friend, and we were in the town and we were shopping, and I was like, right, I'm gonna go in, passing this tattoo. It was called Dragon something tattoo.
Yeah.
And I was walking past, and I thought, right, I'm gonna get this tattoo. I really want something on my neck. And he's kind of like, what the hell are you doing? So I go in, and the tattooist actually said, are you absolutely sure? Because, you know, some people, you might not have a job if you get,
Right,
you know,
literally, yes.
you thought about that, right? So I mean, the guy did give us like a warning or a disclaimer, but I didn't even think twice. I was like, no, that's fine, I'm good, we'll go for it. The same day, I had my ears pierced as well.
Okay, dude. You just hit a spot. So, before I met you, someone who we both know or know described you to me as like he's different, man. Like he's a little out there. Like you almost think he's kind of like a rock star, right? That's how they described you. And I met you. I was like, yeah, he is. He's totally cool with me. I love it. But you said something. You said, being able to get to the point where you're comfortable in your own skin. In my early career, in my 20s, I finished grad school in my late 20s. I had a job, and some things happened. Some interesting things happened. So there's a couple stories. One, I had a goatee, and I went to work for a large consulting company. And I remember I came in, and like the second day there, someone told me like, "Yo, you need to cut off your goatee." I was like, yeah, I'm not cutting off my goatee. Well, here in our culture, we don't wear goatees. Like, it's just it's not professional. And I was like, it's a goatee, right? That's kind of my security, my thing. And I remember I tried cutting it off once or twice. And after that, I was just like, no, I'm rocking it. And whatever comes with it, because it really was something that I was very comfortable in doing, and I didn't feel like wearing a goatee took away from my professional demeanor, appearance, capabilities. And the other thing is, in my 20s, I used to wear a diamond earring. I used to have a stud. So in college, I had a big hoop, like a woman's hoop. I had a big hoop, and I had my nickname Junie made in the little gold engravings like we had when we were younger, and it hung at the bottom of the earring. So then I switched it and I got a small earring and I used to wear a diamond stud. So in my wedding picture, I had a diamond earring in. And I remember going to one of my jobs early in my career and someone made a comment about it. And I came home and I took it out. I think I took it out in 1999 and I've never ever wore an earring since then. And so in June of this year, I walked away corporate America to do the podcast, to finish my book and do some other things. And I've been contemplating like putting my earring back in because my goal is to grow my hair long and let it hang and be curly and like literally just live a modest life and walk along the beach and have coconut water, like, but put my earring in. So that's the second one. So the second one that was the earring. And then here's something that happened to me. Man, this was crazy. I worked for a company. I can say the name. I worked for Alcoa. Great company, great experience. So this wasn't bad. But I remember being at a meeting in Crawfordsville, Indiana, right? Sometime in the mid-2000s. And I had on a diamond watch that I bought. That it was an Aquamaster. It was like 2 carats of diamonds in the face. And I was in a meeting. and we're in a conference room and I'm presenting and I speak and somebody says across the room, "Hey, are those real diamonds?" I was like, "Yeah, they are." Like, we pay you that type of money that you would wear diamond watches like that to work.
Wow.
And I just looked at him, right? Like, I was like, all this stuff I'm saying up here, and you're worried that I got a diamond watch on? And Mark, what went through my mind is, you're stereotyping me. I know what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
right? You're stereotyping, be like, he's one of those guys that are flashy. He wears diamonds. And so that day, I was literally so hurt. I was in Indianapolis. I left work. I took the diamond watch off, and I gave it to my cousin. A two-carat Aquamaster, and I never wore it again. And so when you talk about the earring, when I saw you with the tattoo, like, it was so refreshing to me because you reminded me of who I once was and to some degree who I wanted to be again. Like, I really wanted to be my authentic self. What you don't know is after we met and developed a friendship, I started wearing short sleeve shirts again, right? Because I would only wear button downs because I didn't want people to see the tattoos. But I was like, listen, it's a tattoo, and if you got a problem with that, then that's something you got to deal with because generations have changed. People are working from home. You're worried about a tattoo, and your vice president or your CFO is on the phone with a collared shirt on and their drawers. Right? And you're worried about that too, right? Just don't ask them to get up because you're going to see something you don't want to see.
Yeah, for sure.
Were there ever moments, though, when you walked into corporate America, a place or anywhere where someone kind of gave you that look?
For sure. I mean, 100%, Rob. I mean, when I got the neck tattoo and the earrings literally the same day.
Yeah.
And I didn't wear just earrings that were hidden away, Rob. I mean, both ears were done, not one. And they still are today. I mean, I haven't got them in today, but yeah, wear my earrings when I'm out. And I didn't have, I went straight for the diamond earrings. I was like both ears, diamond earrings.
Yeah.
Into the office, into work. And yeah, the job I was in at the time, the CHRO hauled me in and had a conversation about what's going on, basically, with the earrings and the tattoo, and for sure there was a conversation about professionalism, how do people look at you, you know, the customer base, the management teams that you work with, HR is. You know, those that work in HR are supposed to look a certain way. They're supposed to present themselves in a certain way. And I mean, at that time, I was, 26, 27?
Yeah.
So young, but not young in working terms. And I kind of thought to myself, okay, but I'm comfortable with it. And if people judge, it doesn't change me from how I do my job.
Yeah.
And I'm going to continue it. And I just got on with my job. Now, I didn't stay in that job for much, much longer. I moved on to other things. But yeah, when I was going through interview processes, you know, these things would come up and you could always tell because the person would talk about how important how presentation was.
Giving you hints.
You know, some buzzwords would come out and I'd be sitting there thinking to myself, you know, I know exactly what you're doing, and I'm not going to get this job. And actually, if I got the job, would I actually want to be here? Is that
where
I want
to be? There it is, right there.
Right? Am I going to be happy in that workplace? And so I went through lots of different roles. Most of them were fixed term positions, as I was going from role to role. But I do have to say that the role I'm in today and the company I work for today allows me to be that. Authentic
awesome,
self, right? I don't feel I have to be anyone different. And if I decide to go and get another tattoo on, you know, another part of my body that might be visible, then obviously not maybe the face. I'm not going to know the whole Tyson look, but
you know, I know who you work for, and so I'll say kudos to the folks in that organization, and to the folks that we both know that helped you grow. Outside of me, it just wasn't me, but there's some other folks, you know, they know who they are. I won't say their names, but kudos to you for recognizing that Mark was truly or is truly an exceptional talent, and his tattoos are not derailers. If anything, they literally are conversation piece. Here's what I tell people. Like, people think about diversity, equity, inclusion, and they think about race, gender, you know, disability, social identity, whatever. But, man, like, it also is embracing people who come in who look different, who have different interests and different social styles, right? And you embody that. I'm telling you. Sylvia, Lindsay, John, and Patricia, right? Mm-hmm. I brought to my house. I wish I could show the video and drop it on this clip, but I won't do that to you. But I've never in 23 years in my career ever invited my staff to my house or members of my staff to interact with my family. And I was just so appreciative of you and the rest of them. You guys are just so incredible, man. So, well, when you get your next tat, let me know. By the way, the plan is to come to the UK. I think me and Robin are due a trip. We talked about it.
Yeah.
And so if we come over together, dude, let's go get a tat. You probably don't have any more room, but I'll get one.
There's enough space.
All right, dude.
I always book days as well, Rob. I never do just like an hour sitting. I'd have to book an entire day to sit and get something done. So I don't do small, you know, little slots, Rob. So just be
well, you know, this was like 3 hours.
Okay.
2 hours. 2 hours. This was the smallest one. So, yeah, I don't get baby tattoos either. Don't worry about it. I usually get very detailed tats. Scotland. Growing up in Scotland, being Scottish, what do you think are some of, you've traveled the world, you've been around, what are some of the stereotypes that you have heard or seen, either in person, you experienced, that people have of men in Scotland? I'm asking that question for a reason. I'm going somewhere, but what are some of the stereotypes?
Well, that we've got all ginger hair, or redheads.
Redhead, ginger hair, right?
Gingers, we call them ginger.
Yeah.
That we wear kilts all day with no underwear under it, right? we've got incredibly big socks.
Wow. Okay.
You know, things like that.
What about drinking scotch all the time?
And we always drink scotch, right? Or you know, whiskey. We don't necessarily call it scotch, but we call it whiskey. And that's it. I mean, haggis probably comes up a few times.
Okay.
You know, haggis being an animal, and where does that, you know, once people find out what that actually is and how it's made. there's some funny little looks around there.
You remember the little thing we saw in that one office? You remember what I'm talking about? We was like, dude, you can't have that in your office.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do that further north in Scotland.
Okay, all right. Here's one for you. I know the story, so I want you to tell it.
Yeah.
Dude, you share with me your wedding and your bachelor party, right? Or your wedding.
Oh, yeah.
What did you wear to your wedding? What did you and your groomsmen wear to your wedding?
On St. Patrick's Day, which is an Irish Saints Day, so we were in this bar in Bristol, which is in England, and for the whole weekend on this bachelor party. My wife would not allow me to leave the country. That was the warning of the groomsmen. They were not to take me outside the country. So we went down to Bristol on Paddy's Weekend, as it's called. So everyone's dressed up as if they're leprechauns and Irishmen. And you've got us in there with kind of these bright pink tops, kind of Scottish emblems on them and things like that. But I was dressed as the stereotypical Scotsman, right? So I was in this bright pink T-shirt with the ginger hair and the tartan cap. And then this kilt that just barely covered this, you know, enormous penis that I had to carry around with me because it was so long.
It was a fake one, right?
It was a I mean, I did say I'm Scotsman, I've got big socks. So.
So hold on. So you actually wore a kilt this whole day, celebrating the day.
Yeah. But yeah, the whole day. We did some paintball and all that stuff.
Dude, tell me you had shorts underneath the kilt. Not just, you had shorts on, right? No?
Yes. I mean, it was.
I'm not talking
about
underwear. I'm talking about shorts.
Oh, no, I had underwear, no shorts. Boxer shorts, as we would call them.
Boxer shorts.
I mean, it wasn't even a proper kilt, Rob. The kilt, a proper kilt goes to the knees. I mean, this thing.
Yeah,
is really,
I don't know. You had on a
this
mini
thing
skirt.
Was like a belt. It was like a mini skirt.
Yeah.
Kilt.
It sounded like a plaid mini skirt. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't even get somewhere to eat, so we ended up in a Pizza Hut.
In Bristol.
In Bristol.
With pink hair or pink stuff on and a kilt.
And things hanging out of that skirt.
Dude.
And it was quite the weekend. There was families around.
Dude!
It was embarrassing.
Okay, now, wedding day. Did you dress traditional on your wedding day, or did you rock the kilt on your wedding day?
No, proper traditional on the wedding day. Proper kilt.
Okay.
Properly worn.
So you wore a kilt on your wedding day, though, right?
Yeah, for sure. With all of it, the sporn, the everything, you name it, we had it, and so did all the groomsmen as well, including some of the men that weren't groomsmen. So kind of like the groom's party, if you want to call it that. We all had the same style, but underneath, we had, because I'm a huge Marvel fan. Underneath, we had Marvel T-shirts. So in some of our pictures, we had, you know, this kind of rip-off T-shirt scene with each of us different Marvel or DC characters, you know, that type of thing. I was, of course, Batman. And we've got pictures like that. But it was proper full kilts, Scottish kilts, bagpipes playing and things like that.
Is that common? Is that like common in the culture, that, or you just did it just to, you know?
Yeah, it's probably really common for Scottish weddings to have bagpipes playing, for the guys to be in their kilts or their, you know, some weddings might be guys in suits or tuxedo type dress, but there'll be some sort of tartan connection somewhere in the dress. And some of the weddings will have ceilidh dances, so Scottish dance. Some of them don't.
Yeah.
We decided not to have ceilidh or Scottish dance. We just wanted to rock it out and pop it out. But yeah, it was that type of wedding is what we had. I mean, then we had like a, I don't know what you call it actually, Rob, but we had like this question session between my wife and I. So we sat back to back in front of everyone. And we were asked certain questions, and we had to kind of raise our arm, you know, who's the best kisser, and, you know.
Wow, this is at your reception, the reception for your wedding?
Yes, after the dinner, and it's at the night time with the disco, and all your night guests are there, that type of thing. So that's always good fun.
So you brought up the subject of family. You are a father of three, right?
Yeah.
Right. And you have your oldest daughter who is a teenager now, and then you have your middle daughter and your little son.
Yeah, that's right. Right?
And your wife is Christy.
Kirsten.
Kirsten. Okay. All right. So tell her I said hi. So Mark, I have two daughters. Their ages 23 and 24. You know, they love you, man, like an uncle, dude. Like they truly, truly. When I told them that I was doing this podcast with you, it's like, they would tell Mark I said hi. Like, my family loves you, dude, really loves you. I remember the days of having a teenage daughter. Mm-hmm. I had two of them, dude. And I got to imagine that the frustrations of being a father of a teenage daughter are universal. What's it like for you now?
It's definitely must be universal because it's tough, right?
Yeah.
And it comes with, I mean, being a father anyway, I feel like when you're a father, there's this great sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
And that may be something that's universal. I certainly don't think it's unique in any sense or takes anything away from the mother, right?
Right.
Because I think the mother's role is equally just as important. But I do feel that the father's role has a weight of responsibility because you, I feel I'm the protector. I'm responsible for protecting the family, for teaching the family, for caring for the family.
Yeah.
And through different things. And I think when you're a father of a daughter in a world that is crazy at times,
yeah.
It's tough, right? It's tough to navigate. So she's now a 15-year-old teenager. She's just beginning to enter the big world.
Yeah.
And hangs out a lot more with her friends and a lot further away from home, let's just say. She's, you know, in town, she'll travel to Glasgow, which is about a 50-mile distance from us in Edinburgh, right?
Right.
So she'll travel there with her friends and travel back, and you know she'll get the local bus services at 11 o'clock, you know, at night, and traveling home. So she's beginning to get out into that big world now, and so yeah, I'll stay up late at night waiting for her coming in, hearing the doors close. We have her on tracker, so I'm, you know, like iPhones, you can track location. So I do track her location, right? So I know where she is at all times. But yeah, so, you know, sometimes I'll sit there and look just to check in, just where is she, right? Is she where I think she should be? When she's out with her friends and she forgets to ring dad or she forgets to text in to say where she is.
Okay.
I was just going to explain that. So her mum and I aren't together. She comes from a different relationship, and so for a long time, it was a father, with you know, a single father essentially, right?
Uh-huh.
Bringing up a really young girl all the way through life, right? And from when she was a baby all the way to where she's a teenager now. So going through that journey as a single dad. Brought some interesting stories, right? You know, some of it was great because, you know, from a relationship perspective, some women like single dads, right?
Yeah.
They love the fact that the guy was there with his kid every weekend, every moment. Sometimes it was tart. Some people just weren't, you know, interested in that type of baggage, essentially, is how they would call it, right? So, but yeah, so Erin and I are really close. Currently going through that difficult stage, right?
Yeah.
She wants to have her own voice.
Yeah.
She wants to be her own person, you know. Isn't very clean at times, doesn't pick up her mess, doesn't do the things that you want them to do. But she's a good kid. Which is frustrating also because she's really super smart.
Yeah.
Which I wish I was at her age. I had to really work hard to,
yeah,
you know, really, really put the study time in. She doesn't have to do that. She seems to be able to turn up on the day without actually putting any of the study time in and then ace the exam or something like that. So, you know, constantly trying to teach her and remind her that you can't go through life expecting that to always be the case, right? You've got to put some of the work in. And then this week, actually, Rob, she's got her first job offer. So she's about to go into an apprenticeship at 15. She's not 16 until Christmas, but she's going to go and be an apprentice. She wants to get into beauty, so that's what she's going to go and do. She's going to go and do beauty, which is hair and makeup and all these things, as an apprentice. So I'm really pleased for her.
Here's a question. What have you learned about yourself as a result of watching her and your other two children grow? What have you learned about yourself?
I would, the first thing that comes to mind is patience.
Okay.
I have a lot more patience than I thought, than I thought I had, really. I think, and I think that maybe is something that comes with being a parent. You've got to be patient. I also have to say, resilience as well. I mean, it was tough being, going through that kind of blended family approach. I've also learned that I enjoy being a dad. I enjoy the time that you have, just sit and watching them, just taking that moment just to sit and watch them play, watch them talk,
Yeah.
listen to what they're saying. It brings you so much satisfaction when you're going through those moments.
One of my best memories of our friendship is when you came to the US and I took you to Longhorn. And I
Yep.
got you the blue cheese crusted steak.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh my gosh, Rob, what is this? What's your favorite meal?
Was
It, man, listen, I had to lay off of it because I picked up so much weight. So it is delicious.
delicious.
What's your favorite meal at home in Scotland or just at your house? What's your favorite meal?
Oh, God. Breaded chicken. I'm like
Fried chicken.
vanilla. Fried chicken. I would literally have bowl after bowl of fried chicken or breaded chicken with whether it be mayonnaise or ketchup. That would do me fine. Not a problem.
Really?
Yep. Or I would, close second, I would say a bowl of cereal.
Oh, dude, I grew up on cereal, dude.
Just a bowl of cereal, it doesn't matter what time of the day, breakfast, lunch or dinner, a bowl of cereal would do me no problem. I would love that.
My favorite meal before I changed my eating habits. As a kid, my favorite dish was or were hot dogs and pork chops. And then
Oh,
I
nice.
gave up pork, and then my favorite dish was hot dogs. Like, I'm a hot dog junkie. So I had to give up hot dogs, and it wasn't really healthy. And then I was on this pepperoni pizza kick. And then I went vegetarian for 9 months, truly vegetarian. And I just added chicken back to my diet. And so
Yep.
now I gotta be careful because I'm hooked on these Popeyes chicken sandwiches that they have over here in the States. Incredible, dude.
That for me sounds like heaven. I would literally just have popcorn chicken, fried chicken, anything that American restaurants is perfect for me. Suits me
Well,
perfectly.
now in the last 2 years I started smoking cigars, right? So, hey, anybody from Drew Estates, please know I am your biggest connoisseur of Leather Rose or Fat Bottom Bettys. So if you want to endorse this podcast show, please find me. Anybody who sees this, who knows anyone at Drew Estates, Leather Rose, Fat Bottom Betty, and my favorite drink, Heineken Zero or Cappuccino. So now that I've done the plug, when you come back over, dude, we got to go have cigars.
Yeah. Well, I had a cigar when I got married. My best
Did you?
friend, yep, my best friends and I, they got the cigars. I couldn't tell you what the cigar was,
Okay.
but they snuck us out. They snuck me outside because obviously, Kirsty's not a big fan of cigars and smoking. But so they sneak me out, and we've got our Jack Daniels, with our cigar, and then there we're just standing outside. In our kilts, the jackets are off and we're kind of in our waistcoats and things, and we're just standing outside smoking our cigars and drinking Jack Daniels. Just
Wow.
the three of us, it was just the three of us. That moment will live for me for the rest of my life. It's a brilliant experience just to do that thing outside.
Before I let you go, here's
Brilliant.
my last question. Before Mark Crawford hangs up his cleats on being a HR professional, or just working for a living. Like, before you hang up the cleats and say, look, I'm just going to go sit back and enjoy life. What's one thing you really want to accomplish, achieve, see, experience? Is there anything that you say, this is a huge bucket list or a checklist for me?
Wow. There's probably a bunch of different answers depending on whether
okay.
it be professional or personal.
Yeah.
Professionally, I would say, speaking engagements,
okay,
big events, that opportunity to stand there in front of, 1,000 people, talking about whatever that HR topic is or that business topic that you're passionate about. So certainly from a professional perspective, that's right up there. It's probably the only thing missing off the bucket list professionally, to be honest.
Okay.
And then personally, it kind of sticks to the thing. I like to sing. I'm a huge singer. I used to be in a band as a kid.
I forgot you were in a band. So what type of band? A pop band? A rock band?
It was a rock band. It was a rock band way, way, way back. You're talking like 25 years ago. But I mean that opportunity to be up on the stage. My wife and I have been to some concerts this year,
uh-huh.
And I just sit there and I think, wow! Like we were at Coldplay, and we were at Michael Bublé. We've got Shania Twain in a few weeks, and when you're watching those artists and they're singing and they're dancing and they're enjoying themselves, I'm thinking, how brilliant would it be to be there doing that thing with all of that energy? I think personally I would love to do that, right? I'm not saying I'm any good, but certainly the experience would definitely be something worth it.
If the crowd has enough alcohol, you're good. Just remember that.
For sure. I mean, karaoke is always a good laugh as well.
You talk about Shania Twain and all these different people. But I also know, I remember talking to you, and you like Ice Cube and N.W.A. and hip-hop artists. I'm like, man, this dude, you go the whole gamut.
We've just been to see Guns N' Roses a few weeks back. We went to see Muse, which is probably my favorite band.
Yeah.
Love Muse. Josh, my youngest, loves Muse. As soon as the rock music comes on, he's banging his feet.
Mark, you are such a dynamic brother, taste in music, tattoos, excellent father, dynamic HR professional. And I'm telling you, it's an honor to call you a friend. Like, I really call you a friend, dude. My family loves you.
Thank you, Rob.
I know one of the things you didn't say is I thought maybe you were going to say, I want to move to the States so you can go to NFL football games on a regular. So,
the U.S. move for me would be right up there. It's a little bit tougher probably now given the kids, the youngest are at school now. So, that dream might have to wait a while. But for sure, I mean, I love the NFL. I mean, we didn't even get talking around sport and my obsession and of all sports. I mean, from all types of soccer, from all different leagues, NFL, baseball, huge Cubs fan. We didn't even get down that road.
We'll save that for the next podcast. How about that? We'll come in and we'll figure out a good sports game that just happened, and then we'll use that as a segue to talk about sports on the entire podcast. Does that work?
That works, yeah.
By the way, if you haven't, go check out, the highlights from the Colorado football program and Texas Christian University, because Deion Sanders is the coach.
Oh.
And you have to go follow the backlash that he got about when he transferred and took over that team. He took a 1-11 team. They were 1-11 last year. The average span of loss was about 29 points, and they beat the number 17th ranked TCU, Texas Christian University, who also played in the national championships against Alabama.
Wow.
So people thought that Deion's team was going to get blown out. They beat them at home. So you're a sports junkie. You're a U.S. sports junkie. Go to YouTube. Go watch it. We'll debrief. Man, thank you for joining the show.
No, thanks. Thanks for the time, Rob. Nice to be here. Thanks for the invite to join. I love the conversation.
All right, man. Tell the family I said hi. Take care. I'll